We are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield. I am a local Tacoma cannabis writer, reporter, and activist, and I am joined by my co-host, a medical cannabis grower and activist, lives down in Oregon. How you doing today, Uncle Dig?
I'm doing great. It's definitely winter outside, and it is very cold down here. I don't know about how it is up there.
Yeah, the weather has turned. No more outdoor growing for sure. But we're going to have a garden update later. So I wanted to remind everybody that we are having everybody send in the first time they got high stories, and they can send them in to Uncle Dig. And what is your contact info, Dig?
Yeah, you can send it to me in Gmail at UncleDig4@gmail.com. Or you can send it. You can get in contact with me on Instagram at Uncle Dig.
Yeah, and you can send them in as a recording with your voice, and you can be anonymous, or you could write something up and send it in to Dig, and he'll read it on air. And it has been a really big week in cannabis this week. My alerts have been just going crazy, Dig, with the news that the UN voted to basically deschedule cannabis and lower it down to a lower schedule from Schedule 4 to Schedule 1. Now, of course, the United States said they didn't want to take it completely off the schedule, but they did say that CBD should not be under international law anymore. So that is really going to be a big news for hemp growers out there.
Yeah, it might actually be good for Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky. He should get with the program for the MORE Act, which we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, and there are a lot of hemp growers in Kentucky and Oregon too. And hemp was pretty much illegal growing it up until the 2018 Farm Act. I mean, there were people growing it around, but I believe you had to have some kind of special license, and it was really, really highly regulated and hard to grow hemp in the United States. Most of the hemp was outsourced to Eastern Europe for many years after the Marijuana Tax Act. But all that is changing. And one of the big things that changed this week, like Dig just mentioned, was the MORE Act passed in the House of Representatives. And MORE stands for the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act. And this is a really good step in cannabis legalization, although, as we all know, it's going to hit the Senate and kind of just sit there. But it does send a message out there that a lot of people in Congress and a lot of citizens are behind legalizing cannabis or decriminalizing cannabis, and that's really good news, Dig.
Yeah, it is. And if we could, I'd like to talk about the MORE Act for a little more detail, not super detailed.
Yeah, let's do it.
A little more detailed. There's some things I like about it, and there's things that I don't like about it. And I think that even if this doesn't pass, this is going to be the blueprint. So this is what we're going to be dealing with. So it would behoove everyone in the cannabis scene who has something called a cannabis adjacent business, which this bill outlines, and some other stuff, might want to know what's in here. So how the federal regulations are going to change the way they do business or get them in trouble for the way they do business.
Yeah, give us a couple high points.
All right, some of the good things about the bill, they're legally changing the name federally from marijuana to cannabis. So this should be the last Marijuana Act. Small business administration loans and services available to entities that are cannabis-related legitimate businesses or service providers. It prohibits the denial of federal public benefits to a person on the basis of certain cannabis-related conduct or convictions. There's a personal use exemption from taxation, including home producers. It changes the way that the Small Business Administration views cannabis businesses, specifically related to veteran-owned businesses, which is something the federal government tries to encourage through a little bit of social engineering, through regulation on how those businesses specifically are taxed, and some other small advantages to having a veteran-owned business. So it's all very exciting. It limits the way the federal government can discriminate against prior cannabis users. For instance, cannabis will no longer be a denial factor in security clearances if this were to pass.
Oh,
so
nice.
Those are all very good things.
Yeah, one of the things that I saw down at the very bottom of the list there on the page of things that it did was they are actually going to make a board or a commission to look at federal legalization across the board. So it sounds like it's one of these things where they're kind of trying to get set up to say, okay, now we're going to totally legalize it. And legalize it, the difference between that and decriminalization is, and when it's legalized, that's when the banks can get involved a little more and Wall Street will be getting involved a little more. So there's a little bit of a difference there with the terminology, but you know, there is a Marijuana Justice Act in the Senate. So it's not like the Senate hasn't taken up these issues before. So I'm thinking they're going to maybe start putting these two things together and working something out, because Mitch McConnell has to know that cannabis is coming.
Well, he might just want to go ahead and turn to dust in a country that where it's still federally illegal. And that kind of brings us up to some of the things that the MORE Act doesn't really address, nor maybe should it. For instance, it doesn't trump state law. So the single digit amount of states that still prohibit all forms of cannabis, it'll still be illegal there just according to state laws. Now, there's a built-in $1,000 tax on cannabis business per annum. I'm sure once the Senate gets a hold of this, that will be raised. There is a 5% tax on cannabis produced or imported into the United States. However, this tax slowly raises to 8% over time. Now, there's also a provision in here that specifically continues federal employee drug testing. So if the MORE Act were to pass and was signed by the president, federal employees, federal troops, law enforcement would still be subject to drug testing, which is a bad thing. Also, for some reason, there's several tax provisions that set up special tax brackets for cannabis specifically imported from Puerto Rico, and I don't know why. It's weird.
Yeah, so we definitely need to keep an eye on this. One, you know, the O in the MORE Act stands for opportunity. And as we've seen in the cannabis industry as it's rolling out, you know, sometimes the opportunity is not always for the people that have put the most skin in the game. So this could move forward, and you know, it's really good to stop throwing people in jail for cannabis crimes. But if all the businesses that come out are owned by Wall Street bankers, then that's not necessarily what we are wanting to do with cannabis legalization. So we really need to keep an eye on this. Call your senators, call your house, and tell them, hey, take a look at the MORE Act. And you know, maybe within the next 2 or 3 years, we'll see a little movement in the Senate. What do you think?
I think they could happen pretty quickly, especially if. Okay. Here's the thing: what the Democrats did by passing this in the House, where they have the majority, was they made cannabis a national issue. And that's what's going on. And what we saw is a lot of places that cannabis was on the ballots, Democrats did better than projected. And some people think the reason that was is because one of the ways the Democrats can mobilize their voting block is by having cannabis legalization measures on the ballot. And this may help mobilize voters in that Georgia race if they know that the Democrats are, in fact, the pro-cannabis party. Of course, it could backfire. But this may push the Republicans to start embracing cannabis if they lose Georgia because of their failure to.
Yeah, really good point. I really was scared over the summer that President Trump was going to legalize cannabis and steal the decriminalization, legalization torch from the Democrats. But luckily, they went ahead and moved. And you're right, they went ahead and made it a national issue and said, hey, this is ours and we're going to go forward to that. And that's really good, because Democrats haven't always been super friendly to cannabis as a personally, I thought they should have been. I was a little shocked when I went into the Democratic Party here in Tacoma and Pierce County and saw how, I don't want to say they were anti-cannabis, but they were definitely like, we don't really want to deal with this. But the new generation is coming along. Cannabis legalization is sweeping the nation. They're going to have to deal with it one way or the other. And I'm really happy that the Democratic Party picked it up and that they're going to be the ones to move it forward. Now, the Republicans are going to be watching for the business, kind of on the business side of it, though.
The Democrats have failed on the social equity ticket. They failed to hold the police accountable. They failed to do anything remotely useful as far as social equity. So people have tried to pass cannabis to limit the ability that the state can interfere in their lives. And now the cannabis The Democrats are failing to do that too. Basically, the Democrats have to be bullied into doing anything useful. The only thing useful they do is kind of provide a buffer against some of the worst Republican impulses. That's it.
All right. So we're going to move on to our next story, and that is something on a little bit of a different note, and that is out of Oregon, kind of down in your neck of the woods, sort of there, Dig, and that is a cannabis beverage company is coming out with a New Year's sparkling apple juice called Magic Number. Give us some details about this juice. And we wanted to cover this because this is just one of the new things coming along in cannabis, and that's cannabis beverages.
So this is kind of really cool. Now, this company was started in Bend. It's in Bend, Oregon, which is kind of smack dab kind of in the center of the state. It's kind of like a outdoorsy destination, kind of like a lot of Oregon is. And this guy apparently started making beverages in his garage in 2015. Now he has a company, and they figured out how to make water-soluble tinctures. And so now they're making this like cannabis sparkling apple juice that it's going to be limited to an 850 bottle run, because I imagine it's pretty intensive to manufacture. But it's gonna be available in 100 Oregon dispensaries just prior to the 2020 holiday season. It's gonna go for $36. And this is just kind of showing that, like, there's gonna be so many different ways to imbibe or enjoy cannabis in the future, that if you're not comfortable with smoking, or if you're not even comfortable with traditional edibles and you just want to drink your cannabis, eventually you probably will be able to, because if anything tells us, the more people that are able to manufacture this, the price is going to go down.
Yeah, and it really nice product. It's like it has 50 milligrams of live resin of a strain called Pink Lemonade, and they're actually using Washington State apples to make the apple juice, and that has hibiscus and elderberry flower in it. So it sounds really great, and this is predicted to be a $155 million industry within the next couple of years. So, there's a lot of science going into making THC water soluble, because it's not, it's alcohol and fat soluble, so it takes a little bit of chemistry and a lot of investment to get this going. But sounds like the guy started in his garage, and that's one of the cool things about doing home grows, is you can kind of start these kind of things at your house.
Yeah, it's very neat to hear these stories. I think as the market matures, they'll become less and less common.
Yeah, we've kind of seen that in other industries, like the beer industry, the microbrews, but there's not many microbrews popping up still. So,
well, you know, though, Oregon provides a good counter argument to that. We have more microbreweries than we have just about anything else. I think there's like a microbrewery for every like 10 people in Oregon or something crazy. I mean, there's a lot. And a lot of them prior to COVID were pretty successful. We'll see how that seeing changes after this recession we're having now.
Yeah, in some states like Massachusetts have kind of craft cannabis microbrew cannabis licenses. So would be nice to see more of those over here on the West Coast.
For sure.
So speaking of the West Coast, or this would be the Southwest, is we're going to move on to Arizona. And as we've talked about, Arizona legalized cannabis recently in the last election. It was their second attempt. They already had medical cannabis for a while, and I'm going to reach out to somebody and get them on the air to talk about the Arizona cannabis legalization, because there's been some little bit of strife between the recreational and the medical system even before the recreational passed. But now a disturbing thing is starting to happen that we have seen in other states, and that is they put in the law that local jurisdictions could opt out of having cannabis businesses within their county or their cities. And this is not a good idea at all, Dig.
No. And so, of course, once they got this underway, some cities did decide to go ahead and limit new places opening for recreational cannabis. And those cities are Chandler, Gilbert, and Mesa, Arizona. Now, it seems that local law enforcement seems to be driving the opposition.
Yeah, and it's really strange. It's really problematic. Like here in Washington, we had the same thing, and I believe local law enforcement drove it here too. Like Lakewood, it was the first city, and they came out like the day of and were like, no, we are not having legal cannabis stores. And so law enforcement is driving some of this stuff. And then all over the state of Washington, there's like cannabis deserts, I guess I call them. And it's in California too. It's there are some in Colorado. I believe you said down in Oregon they don't give local municipalities a choice.
So what they did is they'll sometimes allow a local municipality to levy an additional onerous local tax, but I even think that went away. But there were some attempts to do this, and basically the only thing that local municipalities seem to be and have been able to do in the courts and make stick is banning outdoor growing within city limits, which I still don't agree with, but it's night and day from what they're doing in Arizona. And I just like to say something about law enforcement's opposition to cannabis. Law enforcement's opposition to cannabis isn't based on principle. It's based on guilt. They know that they've been wrong victimizing the cannabis community all this time. And if people are allowed to see that cannabis is no big deal, everyone will know that the cops are lying and the cops are bad. That's why the cops oppose cannabis use, cannabis legalization.
Well, and money too. They are, and so it's not just the cops. It's the local municipalities, the local jurisdictions, not decriminalizing cannabis totally. And they're out. They're still out there arresting people. And they're still all on the book saying, "Hey, police, go out there and arrest people." So, the cops are a problem. And I'm really shocked that they would listen to the police about this, because, as far as I'm concerned, the police and law enforcement have pretty much had their say on this issue. And their approach, the Richard Nixon approach, the Marijuana Tax Act approach, the Henry Anslinger approach, you know, this prohibition approach has totally failed. And then it turns out the whole thing was based on racism and classism on top of all that. And then so Mesa, Arizona is going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to listen to you guys. I really don't understand it, Dig.
I don't either. There's a certain mentality in this country that you support the police no matter what. And if you support any organism or organization, no matter what, in defiance of all reason or any, you know, new information, then you're not using your brain to make decision. You're using an emotional decision-making process.
And so now we're going to move on to actually some good cannabis policy. And it doesn't sound like they probably listened to law enforcement in this case, or maybe they were. Over in San Francisco, they decided to ban tobacco use inside apartments, but they didn't ban cannabis use. And I think if you ban cannabis use in apartments in San Francisco, that would be just a big problem, because people would just be out on the corner or walking around smoking their joints out all over the town. I mean, so it's kind of a personal use issue, like alcohol, so... Good job, San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think that some of the San Francisco city leadership brought up an interesting point when they were talking about making this. You know, cigarettes are legal. You can smoke cigarettes outside. You're supposed to enjoy cannabis in the privacy of your own home. You can't do that if you're in a rental apartment. So this protects San Franciscans' ability to consume cannabis in a way that they're ability to consume wasn't protected before, because before they could get into trouble and even get evicted for smoking inside cannabis inside, and now they can't. So this actually protects people's ability to enjoy their rights to cannabis in the privacy of their own home. So it makes the California law feasible.
Yeah, and this is something that's going to be having to be dealt with all over the country with these new laws coming out, because a lot of places renters and or landlords can ban home growing. They also can ban medical cannabis patients from growing. So it's really hard to say, hey, medical patient, you have a broken back, but you can't consume your cannabis at home. So these are things that are going to be changing, and they're moving, you know, kind of slow, but California is taking a good approach there in San Francisco. So now we're going to move on to our garden update from Uncle Dig, and this is an indoor update this week.
Hi guys, it's Uncle Dig with a garden update. After my last grow turned 100% male, I decided to purchase some seeds. While I got a hold of those, I planted a couple of Jaeger bag seeds and one popped. I have been vegging that plant out as a Christmas tree, i.e. I will not be topping or training, just some light pruning here and there. It is just the beginning of week 6, and I just flipped to 12-12 light cycle a couple days ago, so I am anxiously awaiting some female flowers. Cross your fingers. This plant had a mild calcium deficiency in veg that I seemed to have gotten a handle on. The indoor plants seem to need more fertilizer than the outdoor plants I have grown. I have also started a black domina seed in my germination station. My germination station consists of an old arrow garden that I got for my wife years ago that I found in the garage. I took the hydroponic base off and constructed a wooden platform that I then placed my pots on, and I veg my seeds under the fluorescent lights. I hope to have another tent at some point, but I probably won't be able to purchase one anytime soon. You could improvise your grow equipment until you get better indoor equipment as well, with mixed results like mine. However, there is no substitute for the sun. If you want to grow outdoors, you can sometimes germinate under fluorescent lights and then harden off the plants to daylight when it is warm enough. If you only want to grow outdoors, this equipment can help you get a jump on the outdoor season, but it's completely unnecessary if you just want to get one big harvest a year. I have also begun mixing compost to sit over the winter and hopefully grow in this coming summer. I put my old dirt in a pile on a plastic sheet. Next, I plan on adding a little leaf litter and used chicken bedding. I will wrap that up like a giant stinky burrito and then unroll, add water, and then remix periodically. Let's hope this works. That's it for my garden update. Let's overgrow the world.
All right, and we are back. Thanks for that great garden update, Dig, and that really kind of brings up a point that John's your update there brings up something that we talked about on this show and John Kingsbury talks about a lot, and that is that cannabis gives you the opportunity to just do all kind of fun stuff and learn lots of new stuff. You're taking apart a hydroponic thing you were gifted and putting a new wooden stand on it and building stuff and working on things. So cannabis growing at home can be just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it can be. And if you don't have a lot of money, there's ways that you can, you know, save on some of your initial setup. You know, you can germinate under fluorescent lights, for example, like I talked about. A lot of growers start out buying new soil every time they grow, and now I'm trying to get away from that, and I'm trying to compost and reuse at least my outdoor soil, and I'm going to be composting my indoor soil into that outdoor mix as well. I use a lot of soil. I've been growing in 30-gallon smart pots outdoors, so that's a lot of dirt to just repurpose every year.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point, something I wanted to mention. If you are growing indoors, never, never, never bring in your outdoor composted dirt and try to use it indoors. You will end up with a disaster. That was going to bring in bugs, fungus, and all kinds of stuff. You're going to have issues. So when you grow,
don't want the outdoor ecosystem in your indoor ecosystem, no. I would also caution people against bringing plants back inside from outdoors. I would say if you bring a plant outside from your indoor grow, it should finish outside. You never know what you can piggyback inside that might be a problem inside that wasn't a problem outside.
Yeah, that's right. So you want to kind of keep those two things separate. You want to use sterile dirt. And I believe you probably can compost indoor dirt as long as you compost it indoors. I think that would be a possibility, something I have not tried but I have been thinking of. So I'm going to be looking into that. But I wanted to talk about your compost there for a minute because I was saying, well, growing cannabis can be a lot of fun, but, you know, it can be also be a whole lot of work. Like just gardening in general. And I'm not so sure about your compost burrito there, Dig. That sounds like a big mess.
Well, actually, right now, so nothing's breaking down yet. It's just piled in. But what I didn't explain is that it's in a bit of a recess. So and I'm going to actually dig a little bit more to make it recessed a little bit more so that the plastic's just there to keep any seeds from the desert plants that are in my front part of my property from getting in there, because I don't want like goat's head growing out of my pots for lack of a better word. I don't want I don't want other plants to get in there. That's why I'm using plastic to cover it. So I'm hoping it'll work, and I'll let you know if I have like a horrible like compost tea runoff problem and I can't contain the liquid. But so far, it's been working fine. This is my first attempt at a compost pit, so there may be some adaptation over the following winters.
Well, even if it runs off, it's running off and fertilizing other plants around, so you can't, you know, you can't go wrong with compost or compost tea. But it just sounds like maybe when you open it, but that the recess there sounds like it should be a really good place there in the yard. And I am definitely going to be looking forward this year to your spring garden update when we get back around to the spring, which, by the way, folks, is just right around the corner. We are just hitting winter, but I feel like spring is already upon us.
Well, yeah, and I haven't even finished mixing my compost yet, so I'm starting to get that weird winter anxiety where it seems like there's not a lot to do in the garden. But really, there's quite a bit. We got to prep our dirt if we're composting. You've got to add, you know, whatever you're adding to your compost mix so it can cook over the winter. You may have to clear out some old brush, clear out any brush that may be banker plants for pests. All this stuff is stuff that I'm always finding myself doing over the winter or regretting not doing it in the summer.
All right. Sounds good. So we are going to get out of here with It's a Bus segment. And this week, we're going to be right here in the United States, and we're going over to Connecticut. And two men from Virginia decided to go big time, and they got busted with 1,700 pounds of cannabis, Dig.
Yeah, it looks like they were transporting this amount of cannabis in a U-Haul truck. And I think one of the reasons that they got in trouble was that they were using a storage facility as an illegal pot distribution hub. And a lot of times when you run these businesses behind fronts like this, someone just notices something amiss and they call the cops, and then this stuff like this happens. It sounds like they had a very large operation.
Yeah, 1,700 pounds is over $5 million street value and all that. So the war on drugs is still going on out there. They say hopefully legalization will bring that underground market up to the surface, and we can stop having some of this law enforcement issue with cannabis bust out there. So we are going to get out of here, and you can contact me at lukasbarfield@gmail.com if you have any comments on the show. And how can people contact you, Dig, to send in their first time getting high stories or subscribe to your Instagram?
You can send me an email at uncledig4@gmail.com. That's uncledig4@gmail.com. You can also watch me grow on Instagram at uncledig.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH Radio Tacoma. Thank you.